This is Only a Game. I'm Bill Littlefield. The Pioneer Pure Vision and the Continental Tire, the Tostitos Fiesta may well go down to the wire, the EV1.net, the Insight, the Toyota Gator. I'd go on naming bowl games, but it's late and getting later. Here to demystify the murky and vexing bowl championship series once and for all is Yahoo Sports national columnist Dan Wetzel. Dan, there are five undefeated teams going to bowls this year. USC and Oklahoma, of course, will play in the Orange Bowl for the national title on January 4th. Boise State will play in the Liberty Bowl and Utah in the Fiesta. But BCS detractors are raising the loudest cries over the exclusion of Auburn from the Orange Bowl. Why is that?
Well, because they went undefeated in the Southeastern Conference, which is one of the premier leagues in the country. So Utah and Boise State are from less regarded conferences. What Auburn did almost any other year in the last, 50 years would have earned them either the national championship or a shot at the national championship. This year they are left out and stuck playing the Hokies in the Sugar Bowl.
Well, so do you think we should get rid of this system? And if so, can we just replace it with a playoff?
Well, I think we should get rid of this system, and I think we should have a playoff, or you can keep some of your Continental Tire Bowls or whatever you want, but take the top 8 or 16 teams and put them into a playoff system. There is no sport that I know of, and I'm talking down the Little League, youth hockey, anything in Europe, that comes up with a system like college football where you basically play a regular season, take a month off, then stage these random one-game bowls, and then have a popularity vote at the end to decide who's the champion. I don't know, I can't imagine how many cocktails someone would have to come up with to decide that this would be a good system to crown a champion. So if there's any interest in really deciding who the champion is, and there's unbelievable interest amongst the fans and the players around the country, this is about the most cockamamie idea I've ever heard of.
Well, what are the arguments against a conventional playoff system besides the old one that it extends the college football season on towards the 4th of July?
Well, anytime college presidents are complaining that they're worried about their students missing class time, you pretty much know that they're not telling the truth, because that's the least of their issues. It really comes down to a control issue. This sport, the champion that wins the Orange Bowl does not receive an NCAA title. They receive a trophy from Sears Roebuck. This is a champion decided by six major conferences in the country. Their commissioners stage this bowl championship series, and they decide who the champion is. And it's really a money and control issue. If they ran the football championship the way they ran the men's basketball championship, they would make twice as much money. It would be a much bigger pie, but you would have to divide that pie up a little more, and you would no longer be holding the knife. And so this is really a control issue and a money issue more than anything else. All the other stuff is just smokescreen things to lodge a debate about missed class time.
All the griping about the BCS system notwithstanding, and certainly we've gotten used to griping every year, is it fair to say the two best teams will play for the championship this year?
Well, I think you're splitting hairs on what's best, but I think you have two excellent teams, and I think you'd be hard-pressed to say they aren't two of the three best teams. It should be a great game. Once we get past the controversy, it's going to be a very exciting game, a wide-open Southern Cal attack from the West Coast. You're more your traditional balanced offense, great running back from Oklahoma, two tradition programs. I don't know how you choose three undefeated teams and take two of them, but these are certainly two teams that have been ranked either one or two pretty much the entire season. So in terms of excellent national championship matchups, this is going to go down as one of the best ones, I believe.
All right. The admittedly flawed bowl season will kick off on Tuesday with the New Orleans Bowl. To which of the record-setting 28 bowl games will you be paying special attention?
You can't not get excited about, of course, the Motor City Bowl and all of the pageantry that delivers. the tradition of the EV1.net Bowl.
I'm waiting for it.
The Emerald Nut Bowl.
My favorite new name.
There should be some good ones, though. You have to just kind of get in the spirit of it and say, after Christmas, you can sit down at the end of the night and watch some crazy game where the kids are throwing the ball all over and you laugh about it and have some fun, and they're usually some wild games. Probably the best non-big game bowl game is the Liberty Bowl, which will feature the undefeated Boise State team and 10-1 Louisville. And both of these teams averaged over 50 points a game this year. This game could literally be a basketball game, 63-62. I don't care if you don't like college football or think this whole thing's crazy. That's going to be a fun football game to watch.
Now, do you, like me, still mourn the demise of the Humanitarian Bowl?
Well, you remember when they had the bench-clearing brawl at the Humanitarian?
Where else?
That was one of the all-time greats. Yeah, that one is lost also. It's now called the MPC Computers Squared Bowl. Uh-huh. It is gone, but its spirit lives on in a computer.
Later on in the program, Charlie Pierce will strike his annual Heisman pose, a great radio moment if there ever was one, and make his prediction about who will win the Heisman Trophy. But what do you think? Who's the winner this year?
My bet would be on Matt Leinart, the quarterback of Southern California. He's had put up big numbers and had a huge game against Notre Dame right before a lot of the ballots went in. But this is one of those years where there's a legitimate three or four guys that could deserve the award and come away with it. So much like the presidential election, I think, you know, there could be recounts, court challenges, all sorts of excitement. It'll come down to the end on this one. But I think Leinart probably will win it. I think there's a number of deserving candidates.
Dan Wetzel covers college football, among other things, for Yahoo Sports. He joins me from time to time in the Only a Game Bowl. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
In Toronto on Thursday, the NHL Players Association presented league officials with a new proposal, which would include a 24% rollback of player salaries and a luxury tax. The league, which has insisted on a hard salary cap, says it will respond on Tuesday. Meanwhile, fans in the traditional hockey cities aren't yet crying in their Canadian ale over the ongoing dust-up between the league and its players and the loss of almost 400 regular season games. But there is a relatively new group of Sunbelt hockey fans that has kept their passion alive. Reporter Kim Green recently caught up with them, and she has this report.
The Predators Pride Booster Club gets its hockey fix any way it can. Tonight, they're at a Nashville bar watching one of the so-called Predators Classics broadcast by Fox Sports South in lieu of actual games. Later this week, they'll drive 2 hours south to Alabama to watch the minor league Huntsville Havoc. Booster Club treasurer Patty Cavanaugh is a secretary who works a second job to pay for her season tickets. She says she'll return to Predators games when the lockout ends, but in the meantime, she's disappointed in the players.
They dropped off the pedestal a little bit. I think they have forgotten the fans, and they need to come work on my annual salary. And I'd like to see them handle the real world on that.
Most hockey fans here seem to feel the same way. A fact not lost on the Nashville Predators. The young team made the playoffs last spring after several years of flagging attendance. Season ticket sales surged, and it seemed the franchise's struggles were over. Team spokesman Jerry Helper says the organization has worked hard to keep fans interested since September 15th, the first day of the lockout.
We had our owner send them a letter. We then had our coach send a voice message to all of our season ticket holders. We've also done a series of season ticket holder training camps in which our coaches spent a couple hours with ticket holders, giving them a walkthrough of a day in the life of a player and a coach on a game day.
One of those season ticket holders was 49-year-old Mark Hollingsworth, who attended Game 4 of the Western Conference quarterfinals last April between the Predators and Red Wings.
Welcome to Nashville, everybody. This is the Gaylord Entertainment Center. Outside, fans celebrating, awaiting the start of this game, and inside, they are rocking.
I've never been in a building so electric in my life. That kind of energy and thrill, it's so hard when you have that as your last memory of the season and now this ridiculous lockout.
Hollingsworth is the kind of fan the Predators have worked hard to attract for more than 6 years. He's held season tickets since day one and created a fan website which serves these days as a kind of support group for disappointed fans. He's also organized one of the most notorious cheering sections in the league called Cell Block 303.
I think one of the reasons that Section 303 has become so much fun is it's a group of folks that really enjoy being together. We really watch out for each other. We have folks that are battling diseases. We visit folks like that when they're in the hospital. If somebody's been in an accident, we go visit them. We send out get well cards to folks. It's become a community.
Hollingsworth is only one of a number of Tennessee fans starving for hockey. On October 16th, around 10,000 turned out to see Nashville's minor league affiliate, the Milwaukee Admirals, when they played at the Predators' home rink, the Gaylord Entertainment Center.
Fairly impressive considering it's a minor league game in a city that's used to the NHL.
John Glennon covers the NHL for the Nashville Tennessean. He says that although hockey has made inroads in Nashville, the lockout isn't at the center of public consciousness.
Is this something that Joe Smith on the street is talking about all the time? No, probably not. But I don't necessarily see that happening in any city outside of, say, Canada or, you know, maybe Detroit or Minnesota.
In the meantime, Patty Kavanaugh says she's losing patience with Predators classics and deadlock negotiations. She offers this simple message to the league and its players.
Talk to each other. Be a man and step forward first. Because here in the United States, unfortunately, hockey is not religion like it is in Canada. And there's too much of a chance to lose hockey here in the United States. And that scares me. Talk to each other.
For Only a Game, I'm Kim Green in Nashville.
Yeah! Woo! That's the goal now! Woo!
Nashville Cats, been playing since they's babies. Nashville Cats, get work before they're too picky.
It's 18 minutes past the hour.
Mashed potatoes, brownies and gravy, brownies tall.
This season, the Croatian soccer team Nedeljanets FC has played well enough to inspire dreams of promotion from the third to the second division, but financial difficulties have made the team's future uncertain. In response to the crisis, this week, fans of Nedeljanets collected 6 tons of potatoes. Said Ivan Fosnar, the team's fan club manager, "No one here has much money, but we have lots of potatoes to sell, and it's not a problem to donate these potatoes if that will be enough to save the club." Team officials have said they do believe that the sale of the potatoes will net them enough money to complete the season, and villagers have promised to deliver more spuds if Nedeljanets does enter Croatia's second division.
I'll eat them till I drop. I'll eat my potatoes all day long.
I'm Bill Littlefield. Coming up on Only a Game, a discussion with the documentarian who has recently chronicled some of the achievements of one of basketball's most successful coaches, C. Vivian Stringer. But first, LSU, Stanford, Duke, Texas. Have you figured out what's unusual about this list yet? I'll continue. Notre Dame, Ohio State, North Carolina, Connecticut, Tennessee. That's Connecticut and Tennessee at 8 and 9, respectively, in the women's basketball rankings for week 4 of the season. Joining me now to discuss this anomaly and various other hoop-related matters is Michelle Smith, who writes about women's basketball for the San Francisco Chronicle. Welcome back to Only a Game, Michelle.
Thank you for having me.
Neither Connecticut nor Tennessee is among the undefeated in the early going. LSU and Stanford are. Is it too early to draw conclusions?
You know, I think so. Tennessee and Connecticut are, they have star players that have moved on, that have graduated. They have younger players. They may be sort of getting their feet set as far as the season goes. I certainly would not, by those rankings, say, oh, God, they're not going to be in the Final Four. Those teams are, you know, no good. I mean, you can't do that this early in the season. LSU is a very good team, and a lot of people knew that they would be a good team, so their position right now doesn't surprise me. Stanford, it was funny the way it worked. They took 12 days off. They take a final exam break, and they went up 5 spots in the poll while they didn't play. But
not
that
bad.
Had to do with an undefeated record, and they have been winning pretty handily. They got by Texas Tech the 28th of November, a ranked team, a good win for them. But I think where Stanford sort of falls in is sort of remains to be seen. They need to play a couple of people, and they'll see where they are.
On Tuesday night, UConn did slip by the University of Hartford 55-32. That would not be an especially interesting game, except that the Hartford head coach is UConn alum Jennifer Rosati. And it was the first time that Gino Auriemma had coached against one of his former players. Is it safe to assume it won't be the last?
You know, very possibly. It's hard to say who, you know, some players, they go overseas or they have their WNBA careers. Jen Rosati was one of those players that hung on in the WNBA for a little while, but the WNBA has gotten so competitive as far as roster spots that a lot of these players who are very talented, have a lot of basketball knowledge, but are having trouble hooking on, and a lot of them are ended up in the coaching ranks.
Well, I would think that women coming from programs coached by people like Gino Auriemma, Pat Summitt, and Jody Conrad would be great candidates, even if they weren't as accomplished on the court as Jen Rosati was.
Yeah, that would be true. I mean, they certainly will have a great base of knowledge from the things that are imparted to them. Not everybody, I guess, has the temperament for it, though, and certainly that, you know, all-consuming thing that coaches have where they're just, you know, this is what they live and eat and breathe and drink for, you know, not everybody, I think, is cut out to do that.
Jody Conrad, speaking of same, is reportedly about to sign a 5-year extension on her coaching contract at Texas. I wonder how many other coaches working with either gender have that kind of job security.
Oh, Jody's, you know, Jody has got it good in Austin, and she's done so well for them. I mean, she's a legend in the women's game. I think there are coaches who sign those long extensions because they know that you're not going anywhere. Pat Summitt, you know, as much as, you know, every once in a while her name gets thrown out for the Tennessee men's job, or maybe she wants to go to the WNBA. I mean, she's just a stalwart on that campus. Even my own team I cover, Tara Vanderveer, she is going to stay for a while. She's not going anywhere. She's got a long extension, and, you know, they're in place, and it's a stability that a lot of other sports, you know, can't match.
Last Saturday, Michelle, Penn State, an unranked team, beat 7th-ranked North Carolina, and that result apparently so surprised substitute coach Annie Troyan that when the game was over, she said she had to ask one of her players, quote, what happened? And she was delighted when the answer that came back was, we won. Would you tell that story on yourself if you were a head coach?
No, but, you know, it does go to show they've had a rough time to start the year at Penn State. Their coach had a fainting spell. She took a medical leave. They weren't entirely clear what her health status was. They lost some games as, you know, obviously distracted as they were by what was going on. And so to come back and beat a ranked team, I think Penn State is a good team. And it's sort of a funny story. And I think it's, you know, it's a nice story in that you understand that, you know, nope. They're not taking things for granted.
Well, it's a particularly nice story in that the head coach is now back on the job.
Absolutely.
She's apparently fine.
She is.
The men's game, of course, has been characterized by a lot of upsets in the early going. Is the same true of the women's game this season? A way to ask that particularly is Western Kentucky bonked Vanderbilt, the number 11 team, the other night.
Arizona State beat Georgia the other night.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think, yeah, and, you know, I think in college basketball, what's interesting usually is that they play one, and ranked teams will go after one another on a lot more frequent basis than you see, certainly in college football, where, you know, you'll get a few marquee games a year, but there's a lot more opportunity for teams to test themselves. And I actually think it's interesting. It sort of makes a mess of the rankings early in the season, especially in the non-conference, but it really sort of tests your mettle and gets you where you need to be, because by the time you get to March and the NCAA tournament comes, you know, it's a succession of good teams that you're going to have to beat night after night after night to get where you want to go.
Well, undefeated DePaul, ranked 6th, plays Tennessee tomorrow. That makes at least two teams not inclined to load up the early part of the season with pushovers. What other matchups are we looking at that are worthy of our attention this weekend?
Arizona, which is a ranked team, is going to go play Georgia, and Georgia needs to get up off the mat after it's lost a couple of games. Beyond that, you know, I mean, every Sunday it comes up and you go to look and do your rankings at the end of the week, and you can see that top teams are playing one another, and it's really a lot of fun, and it makes it kind of hard to pick your order, but it makes it interesting, certainly.
Now, Michelle, just so we don't get a lot of angry mail from people upset that we've only mentioned the women's game this week, how do you like the fact that Notre Dame, the men's team, beat Indiana at Indiana Wednesday night for the first time in 31 years?
Wow, did that happen? I didn't know.
Oh, very good. Very good. Michelle Smith writes about women's basketball for the San Francisco Chronicle. Michelle, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
You can share your comments with Only a Game by writing to us, care of WBUR-FM, 890 Commonwealth Avenue, Boston, Massachusetts, 02215, or by emailing oag@wbur.bu.edu. Please let us know on which station you hear Only a Game and how to pronounce your name. You can leave comments on our listener line by calling 617-353-1860. You can visit Only a Game's website at www.onlyagame.org. On Wednesday, Rutgers' 68-46 victory over Princeton in Piscataway, New Jersey, gave coach C. Vivian Stringer her 700th victory in 33 years of coaching. On December 15th, the documentary This Is a Game, Ladies will air on PBS stations. The subject of the film is Coach Stringer and the program she has built over the last 10 years at Rutgers. Joining me from NPR's New York Bureau is the director and co-producer of This Is a Game, Ladies, Peter Schnall. Peter, welcome to Only a Game.
Thanks.
Tell me a little bit about what led you to choose Coach Stringer and her basketball program as the subject of your film.
That's a great question, because we often, in our documentary filmmaking, look around and see, geez, what are some of the subjects out there that just haven't been covered that much? There's tons of films out there about sports and basketball, football, all on the professional level, and on some on the college level as well, but very few about the sort of women's teams. And one of the producers at Partisan Pictures, one of the executive producers, had been following Coach Stringer's career for quite some time, and in particular as she had moved over to Rutgers. And we wanted to go inside what it was like to be on a women's collegiate team now, today.
Now, C. Vivian Stringer's teams have made it to the Final Four three different times, which is certainly a measure of considerable success. How else did you measure her achievement, rate her as worthy of the attention of a documentarian?
We were not only looking for a great basketball team, but we were looking for a coach, a leader, someone who was bringing more to her team than just great basketball ideas, moves, plays. And what Coach does is that she takes the whole ideals and the whole game of basketball and relates it to life. And I think that's very important. That's one of the key sort of ideas that we run throughout the film, that this is more than just a game. This is about life. This is about inspiring and about empowering and bringing something to their lives than just sports itself.
Perhaps the saddest moment in the film, at least as far as basketball is concerned, comes when Rutgers loses in the second round of the NCAA tournament. And in the locker room after that game, Coach Stringer has to find something to say to a room full of disconsolate women, some of whom have played their final game.
So thank you for putting us on the mat, because you did it. It doesn't matter. The question is, did we try? And we did. And we just came up a little bit short. So, guys, I love you to death. And I want to see what kind of great young ladies you want to be. Now. Now is the next step. That's what it's all about. We want to see you excel in everything else you do.
This moment came just a year after Rutgers made it to the Final Four. Did you anticipate that the season might be over this early?
We never knew what to expect with this team in that particular season. And in some ways, that's what we find so wonderful about this particular journey, in that it isn't about necessarily winning, although I'm sure they would love to have won, but it's about getting to that point and understanding what it means to have strived and struggled, and then what? Then how do you keep moving forward? And you're right, she is looking at seniors who may or may not ever play basketball again in their lives, other than maybe out on the streets. It's a very powerful, amazing moment. And again, we just were allowed to stand there and watch it unfold, which is a very unusual thing, to that we were given such open access to their locker room, you know, to a very private world.
At one point in the film, Coach Stringer and several of the Rutgers players go up to Madison Square Garden to see Tammy Sutton Brown play in the WNBA. And after that game is over, Tammy Sutton Brown comes up into the stands and sits with Coach Stringer. Now, we can't hear what's going on in the film. I guess you're too far away. But it looks like Coach Stringer is still coaching. Is that about what it was?
That is exactly what's happening. And that's a wonderful observation of that moment, because no matter what, you know, no matter how many years Tammy now will play in the WNBA, whenever she's, you know, one-on-one with Coach Stringer, I'm sure that's exactly the way it's going to be. It's going to be Coach Stringer looking at Tammy saying, "Now, Tammy, if you just move this way and move that way and try this and try that," because Coach will always be Coach. And I think that's what makes her such an important part of their lives, that it wasn't just someone who helped them get through, you know, college, but it's someone who will continue to be able to help them understand what it is to just keep moving forward.
It's only fair to point out that not all the players benefit from Coach Stringer's influence and her efforts. Mandy Clark, who was suspended from the team during the season, returns, but then eventually she leaves school. But toward the end of the film, Coach Stringer explains that she is exactly where she wants to be.
You know, sometimes people say, well, would a woman want to coach a male basketball team? That's the furthest thing from my mind. We don't have enough women. We don't have enough women that as role models, you know, for these young women. We don't have enough, and we've got to do that more. So I just feel that this has been my place. But it's honestly, I felt that it has been my place in life to do something like this, where I can put a smile on your face and develop confidence about you as an individual that can take on the world and be anything that you can want to be.
Did you find when you reached the end of the adventure with Rutgers, Peter, that Vivian Stringer had accomplished what you assumed she would accomplish when you decided to tell her story?
I think that there are always going to be tough players for her to deal with. And I think sometimes that surprises her because, as I'm sure you know, they spend a lot of time trying to bring in the people that they think fit the team's needs, but also the kind of young women that she wants to see playing on her team. And I think that every once in a while there will be someone that will surprise her, that will just not fit, that will just not play it the way she wants it to be played. And I think that, as you saw, if you don't do it, if you step off the line, if you step off that foul line, she's going to turn right around and say, if you don't do it right, then you're out of here. And I think with Mandy, that happened. She gave her a warning several times, but the last one, just that was it.
We should talk about some of the other players and where they are now. Tasha Pointer went on after graduating from Rutgers to earn her master's in education and is presently an assistant basketball coach at Columbia University. Linda Miles, perhaps the most glamorous player you had the opportunity to film, has gone to work for WWE, the professional wrestling operation. I'm wondering if Coach Stringer keeps score regarding what her players do after they leave Rutgers.
Oh, absolutely. And I think she's very proud of her family of players out there in the real world, very proud of them in terms of what they're doing. You know, someone like Tasha, who she just loved tremendously, you know, was having a tough time trying to break into that professional basketball league. And Tasha was persistent, and she tried. And in the end, you know, now she is. She's back in the basketball world. She's assistant coaching. She's going to bring a lot of the same styles and ideas and same inspirational thoughts that the coach, you know, laid on her throughout her career. And Linda Miles is just, you know, she is just great. I think that Linda has larger goals and bigger ideas, and you know, she's always wanted to be a sports commentator, and she's always wanted to get more involved in going out and helping young kids. And, you know, this opportunity arose, and it's a pretty good gig, if you don't mind getting slammed and pushed around a lot. But Linda's strong, and she'll hold herself up well.
Peter Schnall is the director of This Is a Game, Ladies, the documentary that will air nationally on PBS this Wednesday evening at 9 o'clock. Peter, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Roadhog! done it again.
It's 22 and a half minutes before the hour.
Support for Only a Game comes from the listeners of WBUR in Boston. Additional support comes from Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Available at the Implant Dentistry Center at Bicon.com, Bicon.com. And from dairy farm families from Massachusetts and throughout New England who own Cabot Creamery, five generations making naturally aged cheddar cheese in Vermont, CabotCheese.com. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
I'm Bill Littlefield, coming up on Only a Game, the 12th annual Last Best Hope. If there are sports fans on your holiday shopping list, the Only a Game gift guide. But first, I'm joined by Charlie Pierce for a look at the week's news. Hello, Charlie.
Hi, Bill.
On Thursday, the National Hockey League Players Association met with league officials and proposed an immediate 24% rollback of current salaries as well as a luxury tax. The union contends that this plan will save the league $1 billion over the next 6 years. Will the league, which says that it will examine the new proposal and respond on Tuesday, accept this deal?
No, of course they won't, because they want a salary cap, and because salary caps are not about economics. Salary caps are about power and control. The players' proposal is a remarkably inventive and remarkably imaginative solution to a problem that everybody claims they want solved. But the owners want a salary cap to maintain control of the players, not to save themselves any money. The players' proposal will do that. So my guess is that the owners will reject this latest proposal.
It seems impossible, but it's time for you to strike the fabled Heisman pose once again.
Hang on.
There it is. Perfect, as always.
You want to see it in the mirror?
Remarkable. And then tell
see
us
it again?
Who's going to win the trophy this year.
Jason White's got a chance to win it again, the quarterback from Oklahoma. But I think Matt Leinart from Southern Cal is going to win. He is the quarterback of the national championship team, and for this particular andiron, that's always a leg up. If I had a vote, if I were king of the forest, as we say in the program, I would pick the young running back from Oklahoma, Adrian Peterson, who I think's had the best year of any player.
There are reports of dissatisfaction with the process that determines which teams participate in the college football bowls. Say it ain't so, Charlie.
No, not again, really? Look, I'm one of the people who says, let 1,000 flowers bloom. If you want to have 3 national champions, let's have 3 national champions. The only people who want a playoff that I can tell that are in the position to get one are people who run television networks who need another big television show for the week between the end of the NFC playoffs and the Super Bowl. For me, you know, I like the multiplicity of bowl games. I do notice, however, that my favorite bowl game, the former Poulin Weed Eater Independence Bowl, is now merely called the Independence Bowl. This year featuring Miami of Ohio and Iowa State. Throw the record books out when those two traditional rivals.
Absolutely. We also, to my great distress, lost the Humanitarian Bowl.
Yes, I guess there just isn't room for it anymore in this modern age,
Not in this landscape, no. Last Saturday, Chandra Johnson, an assistant to Notre Dame's president, shaved her head in order to protest the firing of football coach Tyrone Willingham, which apparently embarrassed her boss, the Reverend Edward A. Malloy. How was it that the university president was left out of this process that now is considered to be flawed by many?
I think Tyrone Willingham should go back to his office because I think he got fired by a guy working at the gas and sip in South Bend. I don't think he's really gone. The president of the university has said he didn't have anything to do with it.
Right.
Obviously, the assistant to the president is not happy about it. It looks to me, and I really like hate this whole notion, that Tyrone Willingham lost his job because a bunch of pudgy, middle-aged, largely Caucasian yahoos from the local fanzine got mad at him.
The IOC is currently investigating doping allegations against Marion Jones, Charlie. She could be stripped of her 5 Sydney medals as a result. Do you think the lords and ladies of the rings will find a more credible witness than Balco President Victor Conti?
No, and it won't matter because they'll do what they want to do because they don't believe in anything remotely considering a standard of proof. If you want to see where drugs have taken sport down the rabbit hole, now passing the test isn't good enough.
Ex-Canadian sprinter Ben Johnson, who was stripped of the gold medals that he won in the 1988 Olympics after testing positive for steroids, said on Wednesday, quote, "Anybody that wins gold medals and sets records is not clean." Is this dismissible as a self-serving overstatement?
Well, a little bit, I think, because he was asked if it included Donovan Bailey, who won the 100-meter gold in 1996 and was also Canadian. He backed off a little, saying, I'm not saying he did or he didn't. I'm just saying people at that level aren't clean. The most interesting and most truthful thing Ben Johnson said was about the baseball players. The American way wants to see those players do great, hit home runs, and the fans will pay the money to go and see them. It's a business. And if you don't think that's part of the reason why baseball ducked this alleged issue for as long as it did, then you're fooling yourself.
In connection with the brawl in Detroit 3 weeks ago, five Indiana Pacers were this week charged with assault and battery, as were seven paying customers. How do you think this all will work out in terms of time served and or fines paid?
Fines, community service, lots of charity work, and a ban for most of the fans, I think, if they get convicted from the Palace. I'm rather pleasantly surprised by this. Against what I almost would have bet my life on 2 or 3 weeks ago, the seven fans are being charged with just as serious offense as the five Pacers, and it looks like they're being taken seriously because the prosecutor said he'd like to hold one of them more accountable because had he not thrown that cup and struck our test, we wouldn't be here today. And it's the first time I've heard anybody actually blame the fan who committed the first action for what ensued.
And finally, Charlie, Madame Tussauds Waxwork Museum in London has irked many with a nativity scene that features soccer star David Beckham as Joseph, and I understand he's not even the most recognizable figure in the scene.
Tony Blair, George W. Bush, and the Duke of Edinburgh are the three wise men, which sort of means they're too short. The shepherds are Samuel L. Jackson, Hugh Grant, and an Irish comedian named Graham Norton, who often works in a dress. Needless to say, the Vatican is not amused. I don't know if you've seen it, but there is on the internet a picture of Leonardo da Vinci's Last Supper with Johnny Damon in the prime spot in the middle. And somehow, I think, contrary to everything we believe, David Ortiz as Judas.
Yes, it is alarming. I agree. Charlie Pierce writes for the Boston Sunday Globe magazine. He joins me each week at this time on Only a Game. And rumors that a representation of Charlie in the Heisman Trophy pose is included in the Madame Tussauds Nativity exhibit are utterly unfounded. Thank you, Charlie.
I'm not really sure whether I think George Bush as a wise man or whatever Spice Girl David Beckham married as the Virgin Mary is a bigger piece of miscasting.
Ere the first day of Christmas, Only a Game gave to me a sports holiday gift guide.
You start.
Okay. On the first day of Christmas, my true love gave to me a beer.
It's time for our 12th annual attempt to help you in your search for holiday gifts for the sports-oriented on your list. We'll start with a product that will delight both hockey players and golfers, or confuse them. It's a product called the five-hole putter. You can put a golf ball with it, but it features a rectangular grip complete with the little nub that you find at the end of a hockey stick. I asked John Krause, who offers this nifty interdisciplinary tool, whether he had ever heard of someone using the five-hole putter to high-stick an opponent on the green.
Not yet, and we recommend not doing that in the warning sticker that comes with the putters.
So the sticker says something like, no high-sticking, eh?
Yeah, exactly. Keep it down. Although we do have on one of our descriptions of one of our putters that you can use it to rough up your opponent if it's getting close on the greens.
Well, yeah. I mean, if he steps in your line or something, you might want to take a spleen out with a butt ender.
Just give him a little butt end with the hockey end or possibly a little spear and let him know you're there and you mean business.
Jeff Wolf is National Sales Manager of Chef Specialties, the company that offers the Chef Slammer Baseball Bat Peppermill. I asked him if it included a label warning lucky giftees not to try to hit a baseball with the 14-inch high mill.
Actually, no. Nobody's ever brought that up. Now, it has been touted, you know, as an attitude adjuster, of course, and, you know, the husband straightener-outer or whatever you like.
That's not a holiday sentiment.
People buy some strange gifts, so... You never know what they're going to be used for.
Happy Hanukkah. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Hanukkah. Shalom L'chaim and Mazel Tov.
Happily, not all of our gift suggestions double as weapons, and not all of them have to do with Christmas. Consider, for example, a baseball card set that features every known Jewish Major League player. Michael Feldberg is the director of research at the American Jewish Historical Society, the group which offers Jewish Major Leaguers baseball cards. He insists there's no need to worry that Hanukkah is half over.
We can deliver overnight if we need to, and don't discount intermarried couples.
right? It's a great Christmas present.
Is there a discount for intermarried couples?
No. That's why it's double. We double the charge. No. Just kidding.
And then there is a gift that has already changed the course of baseball history.
Little field game throw! The Red Sox beat the Mets 8-7. The series is over!
That little audio fantasy features the voice of John Hart, president of That's Me Sports, the company at the ready to supply you or a loved one with authentic-sounding play-by-play in which you or a loved one star in the sport of your choice. He swears that it was sending me that audio last spring that dispersed the curse.
Well, between you and me, Bill, I think we were the ones responsible for ridding the Red Sox curse.
John, I can't help but notice as we talk that your voice is a little hoarse, but this is a good thing, right? This means business is good this holiday season.
Hoarse means yes. I've got several broadcasters, although every time I try to rip myself off the assembly line, they keep sucking me back in.
Now, tell me, just out of curiosity, what is the most bizarre request you've gotten to customize one of these tapes where one of your clients becomes a heroic sports figure?
Rhythmic gymnastics, tiddlywinks, checkers, deer hunting. I'm not making any of these up, Bill.
I don't even want to think about what the tape you would make of somebody hunting deer would sound like.
It wouldn't be very long, I can promise you that much. You know, maybe one shot and then a dropped beast and then you're it. What do you do then, you know?
For those less inclined to drop a beast or even fantasize about same, Lori Besch of Rinky Women's Hockey Wear offers faux fur-trimmed hockey gloves for the player wishing to accessorize her uniform. The leopard skin trimmed gloves work especially well if you play for the Leopards. Golfers unable to emotionally disengage from their alma maters may be pleased to receive, courtesy of Team Effort, wood covers resembling the mascots of the colleges they attended. Lions, tigers, bears, animals of that nature, including Alabama elephants and Florida gators. Sports fans stuck in an even earlier developmental phase will be delighted to find under their trees replica Star Wars garments offered by WickedCoolStuff.com, including Yoda's Jedi baseball jersey, Boba Fett's Assassin's basketball tank top, and Darth Vader's dark side football jersey. Eating is a major concern in any holiday season, and if you've got someone responsible for providing the fare on your shopping list, you might want to consider the Tailgates to Touchdown Cookbook by Nina Swan Kohler, who is a uniquely qualified author.
I can actually say that I have played in the Super Bowl myself.
Mm-hmm.
Super Bowl V, my band was the halftime show. It was a clarinet I was playing, but nevertheless, I played.
And that counts. And that was back in the days before you could get on the Super Bowl halftime show without having to rip your clothes off.
Exactly. It was definitely more wholesome back then.
Dashing through the line, a blocker leads up front, a broken field tackle, defense had to stunt.
Of course, after you've taken care of the hungry, they're going to be thirsty. Even people who've forsaken the family dinner to go to the game get thirsty, which is where the sippin' seat comes in.
My name is Bert, president of Papa Bert Incorporated. We have a product called the sippin' seat, which we created a number of years back. Basically, it is a stadium cushion with a built-in bladder to carry and dispense your favorite beverage wherever you are.
Now, has anybody who has used your product ever reported, Papa Bert, I took out the little hose out from the seat, the cushion I was sitting on, and people were kind of looking at me funny in the stands. You ever get that?
No, they're only envious, you know, when they see what you have.
If you're worried that all the sports fans on your list already have cookbooks and have figured out how to get plenty to drink without sitting on their favorite beverage, well, hey, how many of those fans have a football helmet-shaped mailbox printed in the colors of their favorite college or pro team? These beauties are so attractive that according to Cal Cleveringa of sportsmailbox.com, Some folks who receive them can't bear to expose them to the elements.
Most of the mailboxes do not even go outside being used as a mailbox. They sometimes put them in their den, by the pool table, even in a flower bed, putting some nice matching flowers around it, or by the swimming pool in the backyard.
And I should describe it. It has the little flag on it, you know, so if it is used as a mailbox, the postman can come up and put the flag up,
yes.
And then we'll know that either there's mail or somebody's committed a penalty.
Exactly. We at one time wanted to have, when we opened up the door, are you ready for some football? But the only person that really heard that was the mailman. He probably got a little tired of that song.
The most fortunate basketball fan on your list might find a unique gift in his mailbox if you're willing to purchase the Allen Iverson question offered by East Bay. This replica of the Philadelphia 76ers' first basketball shoe features, among other things, 246 diamonds at 25.5 carats on the laces and in the air sockets of the soles. The glittering shoe will only be made when somebody orders it for the price of $65,000. According to the ad for this remarkable item, it takes bling bling to a whole new level. My East Bay representative, Nathan, cheerfully admitted that he didn't expect this theoretical item to fly off its cushy shelf.
Personally, I really didn't. I mean, I can see people just asking about it, but nothing real serious. I mean,
but you're a good sport. If somebody were to call up seriously and say, okay, I'm your guy.
Okay.
I'm a size 11 and a half, double A, and I want that sneaker, and I want it by Christmas. Would it throw everybody into a complete tizzy there?
It probably would, yes.
It's time for the holly, the fun, and the folly, and all of that jolly jazz.
Here's hoping we've provided enough answers to your vexing holiday questions and that you avoid the Yuletide tizzy currently plaguing those poor souls who haven't heard our treasure trove of gift ideas. Happy holidays from all of us at Only a Game.
But I wouldn't trade Christmas for New Year's Eve, Thanksgiving, Halloween, and the rest. Christmas, we love you.
Only a Game is produced by Karen Given and Gabe O'Connor. Our technical director is John Perotti. Our senior producer is Gary Wallach. To order a copy of Only a Game, call 1-800-909-9287, toll-free. CDs and cassettes are $15 postpaid. That's 1-800-909-9287. If you'd like to hear this program again, sign up for our newsletter or web window shop the various treasures featured in gift guide number 12, as well as a few that aren't, please visit our website, onlyagame.org. Our final word comes from the intrepid Nathan of East Bay, whom I queried regarding the mineralogical details of the $65,000 diamond-encrusted Allen Iverson question sneaker.
What I can tell you is that you get free shipping on it.
Hey, that seals the deal. Who cares how the gems are arrayed? Free shipping? I'm there. I'm Bill Littlefield. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
The idea is clever, but Subways will never quite handle that huge evergreen.
And the old office party where Stanley and Marty keep drinking until they turn green.
But I wouldn't trade Christmas for Labor Day or Easter, Washington, and the rest. Christmas, we love you the best.
This is NPR, National Public Radio.